Hey, Barge, alcoholic. She moved all the tissues, so I can't cry. Now I have no tissues. It's a sad story. It's good to be here. I'm glad to be here. I want to commend the committee for the job that they've done this weekend. Old friend of mine used to say, you want to leave your footprints in the sands at times, wear your work boots. And I know this committee has put their work boots on to get all this done, and I appreciate it. I loved walking in the luncheon today with all those yellow roses. The yellow rose stands for joy and fellowship. And man, there was that huge table and all that head table with all that yellow roses and all the tables with the yellow roses. And joy and fellowship. Well, I got it there. So it's been really nice for me. I was here last night at the opening meeting, and I heard our speaker talk about getting the lemon drops out of the basket and getting naked. And I wasn't sure why I was supposed to get naked with the lemon drops, but I got them out in my room today, and I had the lemon drops, and naked, I was wondering what I was doing here. But in my room, they got this big, big mirror, and I went and stood in front of the mirror, and it's like the mirror from one of those amusement parks or something, because I stood in front of that mirror, and I didn't see the tall, dark, handsome guy that I am. I saw a little short, fat guy eating lemon drops, you know? But that's what she said to do, so I was trying to do it. And I went to the family meeting this morning. You ready to go to the family meeting? Wow. Those people led the meeting, spoke at the meeting, did the seating at the meeting. I mean, these people did everything. I was thinking I would have liked to have known them back when. I would have liked to have ran with that crowd, but I don't know if I could have kept up. Yeah. It was so nice to be there. And got to the luncheon. You know, who went to the luncheon? All right. Yeah. Well, I'm standing in front of you tonight. According to our Alateen, I flunked. She said you either went to Alateen and you did good, and if you did good, you went to Al-Anon, and if you flunked, you went to AA. And I flunked. I didn't really want to admit that, but I guess I flunked. You have to be proud of her, Mom. Yeah. I didn't have Alateen in my area in the 70s. And I started a couple of Alateen meetings in my house on Monday night and a Thursday night. And the Thursday night meeting is still going on. I had the meetings for quite a while, and then the Al-Anons found out the drunk had the Alateens, and they attacked me. Took my Alateens away. But I love Alateen. And I heard our speaker today talk about working the steps. And you could hear it in her voice of how she's doing that step. So in AA, we ask our people to work those first three steps so they don't drink anymore. Do those first three steps, you don't have to drink anymore. And if you want to get sober, you could work the next six steps. That's what you do to get sober. And the 10th step says we continue, and the 11th step says we to improve, and the 12th step says we practice. So you get to do these things here, and that's kind of what we do here. I was hoping Emma Linda was going home, but she's here. I don't know whether I'm color coordinated or not. I tried to put the clothes on. I had a hell of a time. Would you wear the white underwear or the black underwear with this? I mean, I was going nuts. And can you wear stripes in the tie if you have stripes in your shirt? I was just hoping she wasn't here, but there she is. So it's all good. Well, I introduced myself, an alcoholic. Any other alcoholics here? All right. How about any Al-Anons? Any Al-Anons here? Oh. Well, us Alkies better be on our good behavior, sounds like, huh? How about any new people? How about any new alcoholics? Anybody 30 days or less? Any new people? How about an Al-Anon? Where's that newcomer gal that was here earlier? Stand up and tell them who you are. Sure. We want to see who you are. How many days at Al-Anon do you have? 28. Okay. How many nights you got? Okay. We get a lot of drunks in my area. They'll have 28 days and 17 nights, you know. And so I was just trying to check and make sure how they do it out here in San Bernardino County. Well, I'm going to follow you. I have 8 days today. 8 days. 8 days. Big time. Big time to get 8 days. 8 days of sobriety for us drunks. 8 days. How about people with months? Anybody got months here? How many months you got? 5 months. I'm going to follow you too. I got 3 months. So I have 8 days and I have 3 months. How about years? Anybody got years here? How many you got? 23. Shout them out. 44. 47. Who said that? Okay, I have 49. That's a lot of years for a drunk like me, 49 years, isn't it? See, but you don't do this program by years, do you? We don't even do it by months. We do it by days. So anybody knows me knows how many, I always know my days. Always know my days. Because when you got days, you have to show up and do these things, and that's the way it is. I don't really know what I want to talk about tonight so much. I started the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm a construction worker, and I was on a drunk, and I wound up in Charlotte, North Carolina, long story, and I was there for a little while and had my two sons with me, and my sons had missed their mother and their sisters because I didn't tell my wife I was taking the kids, and she ticked me off, you know. And they called home for Christmas, missed their mom, and the next thing I know, my wife and daughter showed up. I had a wife and four kids in those days, and I was living in a singles-only place, and they were not happy to have a wife and four kids in a singles-only place, so we moved into Charlotte, and I went and rented a big house. I had a good job and making plenty of money, and we got in this big house. I had 3.5 terraced acres and my own little pond, my own little forest. That's real big when you're in the South, you know. And we got along for the whole month of January. It was like a record. And it was another one of those with me. I don't know if any of you guys ever had this. This time we're going to make it. This time. I know we didn't make it those other times, but this time we're going to make it. I'm not running with them guys in California anymore. All the people I owe that money to, they don't know where I'm at. This time. This time is going to make it. This time is going to be okay. And February 10th rolled around. That's my belly button birthday. And they were having a party for me. It was a big event in my life, back with the wife and the kids and the family, and we're all going to have this party and celebrate Dad's birthday, and it was really an event. And I was coming home. I got about a half mile from my house, and I stopped with one of my foremen, have a quick shooter on my birthday, on the way to my party. I got home late for dinner. I got home late for Easter dinner. I know I was late because they were just picking up the dishes. Now, I don't know how many days it is between February 10th and Easter, but that's how many days I was gone. Because I was one of those guys that stopped to have a quick one, and you never knew when Dad was coming home. I didn't know either. Nobody knew. And so my family turned on me. You know how your family turns on you? My God. And they said I had a drinking problem. I had to go to some place called AA. I had never even heard of AA. And so they wanted me to call this place. I'm not going to call anybody. And so they finally made the call, my boss's wife and my wife. Said two guys would be out to see me in about an hour. So I went out on the front porch, had a huge front porch, and had my bar out there. And I picked up all the papers and, you know, polished all the glasses, got everything ready for these AA guys. They come in, introduce themselves. How you doing? Everything's good. Asked them what they wanted to drink. They wanted coffee. I said, good. What do you want in it? They wanted cream and sugar. I said, wait a minute. I can fix your coffee up. You name it, I got it here. These two guys wanted cream and sugar. I thought, Jesus, sent me the wrong two guys. So we sat out on my front porch. They want them over here and one of them over here. And we're talking along. And one over here says, how are you getting along with your wife? I thought he was going to ask me about my drinking, you know. He says, how are you getting along with your wife? Well, I was thinking up the answer. One over here said, probably not so good, huh? How are you getting along with the kids? Probably not so good, huh? How are you getting along at work? Probably not so good, huh? These AA guys, they ask all the questions, they answer all the questions. I never said a word to anybody. They drank coffee with cream of sugar and they smoked all my cigarettes. Seemed like you people have your own cigarettes. Then he decided I need to go to this AA meeting with them. And I told him, good, that's fine. Tell me where it's at and I'll meet you there. He said, no, we're going to go home and change clothes and come back and pick you up and take you to the meeting. I said, no, I'll meet you at the meeting. They said, no, we're going to go home and change clothes and come back and pick you up and take you to the meeting. I got the wife and everybody peering around the corner. I said, okay, I'll go to the meeting. And so we, a lot of driving, and they went and they came back and they picked me up in this huge church. We got in just when the meeting was starting. We sat on the back row. Just as sat down and the meeting got started, and then they called for newcomers. Anybody want a desire chip? I'm looking for the newcomers, you know. These guys picked me up in the back aisle and sent me down the aisle of this church to this guy leading the meeting. And he held up, he handed me a white poker chip. And he said, this is a signal that you're now, right now, a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. He handed me the chip. Hell, I just had sat down. I'm already in. You guys are easy. Then he held up a red chip. And he said, we call this the stop chip. And if you don't drink for 90 days, you could earn this chip. But if you decide to drink, swallow the white chip first. I didn't think that was very funny. He didn't talk to me anymore, so I went to sit down. I got all the way to the back, and I'm sitting on my right. On the back row, on the left side, was my neighbor. Here I'm going to AA. I don't even want to know I'm going to AA. And who's there? My neighbor. The guy lived right next door. I'm talking about my neighbor. You know the neighbor just had me arrested? That neighbor. See, I'm not from the South. I'm a California guy, but everybody down South, they get these big lawns and they get these big riding lawnmowers. Well, I went and got me a Craftsman riding lawnmower, you know, candy apple red with pinstripes, the color of the day. But the problem is, my neighbors, 7 o'clock Saturday morning, ride their lawnmowers and clip all their little bushes and do all that stuff. 7 o'clock Saturday morning. I already shared, I'm a construction worker. A lot of times you stop for a quick one Friday night, you're just getting home at 7 o'clock Saturday morning, you know? 7 o'clock Saturday morning is not a good time for me. Mow my lawn. But now, Saturday night, the bars close at 1 o'clock. You go home, you get your pint of bourbon, you get your lawnmower. Have you ever been in a down south, warm, humid Charlotte night? Stars all over. I'm from L.A. We didn't got stars, you know? Stars all over the place, and they got all those bugs flying around sparking. I mow my lawn. I'm out there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, mowing my lawn. I ain't bothering anybody. This neighbor, one of you people, called the cops on me. The next thing, this guy pulls his squad car right up on my freshly mowed lawn. And I don't know if you've been down south, but they all got these big Smokey the Bear hats, right? He whips out of the squad car. Then it takes about 35 minutes to get the hat just right, you know. Not really that long, but they have to adjust the hat and get it just right. Then this guy comes over and starts hollering at me for mowing my lawn. My lawn. He's hollering at me. So I tried to tell him, you know how we tell him over and over sometimes? I had the story. I just kept telling him, look, buddy, you just parked your car on my lawn. My lawn. And this is my lawnmower, and I could mow my lawn anytime I feel like it with my lawnmower. Now, you need to get in your little car and get out of here. I must have told him 10 times. He went to show me his gun, so I showed him mine. He took off and hid behind his car, took that big old hat off. I said, I got rid of him. I kept mowing my lawn. He called all his buddies. They all came. They had them big hats and they all had the big guns. I had big guns too, but I never got in the house to get them. So there I am hogtied on my own lawn. Here I'm out here in San Bernardino with all you axe murderers. And I got to rest for mowing my lawn. This is a tough guy story here. And now I'm in the meeting with this guy. And then later, this guy was having a birthday for 30 years. They want me to go meet the guy. And I'm thinking, the guy's been here 30 years. He ain't got this down yet. What do I want to meet him for? And then I thought, well, I do have the white chip. Maybe I could help him. And a little while later, they had a speaker go to this meeting. And the guy stood up there, and he went to Duke or Wake Forest, one of those North Carolina schools. And a tall, good-looking guy, and he had a really nice suit and tie on and wingtip shoes. And yeah, man, he just looked really good. And he talked about going to college and all those things. And I got married when I was 16 to a little 14-year-old girl. I didn't go to college. I never got out of high school. I never had a suit and tie in my life. Wouldn't know how to tie a tie if you gave me a tie. I'm in that room with this guy, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here with this goat? What's he going to say that's going to help? I need to hear something here. Duke College and country clubs and all that stuff. See, but he didn't talk about that. He talked about alcoholism. He told everybody in that room how about loneliness. I don't know about you guys. You know about loneliness? Man, I know about loneliness. He just told everybody how he was feeling about that. You never tell anybody how you're feeling. You hold that in. You don't share that stuff. He talked about being lonely to everybody. He talked about how his families talk about him like he wasn't even there. That's what my family was doing with me. What should we do with David? Should we put him back to Metropolitan State? Should we call the cops? Is the restraining order still good? They're all talking about it like I was a chair or something, you know? He used to say, what are we going to do with David? I'd raise my hand. I'd say, shit, I think you ought to leave him alone. You know? Yeah, they never called on me, though. And this guy talked about that. He talked about how he had people he cared about. You got anybody you care about? How he had people he cared about, and he just couldn't maintain that connection with them. He wanted so bad to maintain that connection, so bad to be them part of his life and them to be part of his life. So bad, and he just couldn't maintain that connection. It was like a wall between him and the people he cared about. And I knew all about that. He talked about he had this hole in the middle of his stomach, this emptiness. Our good members call it a soul sickness. A soul sickness. I had a hole in the middle of my gut and was just full of emptiness. No matter what I do, I couldn't fill that emptiness up. And all those years of drinking. Do anything to fill that hole up. And so I went to my first AA meeting in Charlotte and I left with a stomachache. Wondering what was going on here. See, but I got everything I needed right there at that first meeting. Because it's the Me Too program, isn't it? Me Too. When we go to a meeting, I could hear it today in the meetings. I could hear it in the family meeting. I could hear it last night. Me Too. Yeah, I felt that way. Yeah, me too. I've done that. Yeah, me too. Me too. I've been new like you. 28 days. These guys picked me up and took me to some other meetings. This is April of 1969. And, but the meetings back there, if you went to the meetings, they had all these people standing out front. And they all want to shake your hand, put their arms around you, ask you personal questions, you know. Hi, how are you? Is that in the big book? Hi, how are you? I used to tell them, none of your business how I am. Sometimes I tell them, you know, I'm hanging out with you, so I ain't doing too good, am I? You know, that's how I am. Then you go into the meeting, and at the end of the meeting, they pass the basket. And as soon as you put the bucket in the basket, the next thing, somebody's holding your hand, and you're doing prayers. I don't hold people's hand. And I don't want you holding my hand. And I don't do prayers. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, God and I was not on speaking terms. Not on speaking terms. So I did in 1969, I did David Barr's List of Alcoholics Anonymous. Meeting starts at 7:30, go about 7:35. You don't have to do all those greeters. When you put your buck in the basket, get out of the room real quick, because if you're not quick, they're going to be holding your hands, you're going to be doing prayers. And then they take you to the parking lot till your feet go to sleep and they talk to you. You know. So I came a little late, left a little early. You could probably do that in an Al-Anon meeting. Came a little late, left a little early in 1969, and a little late, a little early in 1970, a little late, a little early in 1971, a little late, a little early in 1972. In and out of the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous all around the United States. Get 10, 12, 15 days, 30 days. And they say, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink no matter what. And I say, okay, I'm not going to drink. And then I would wind up drinking again. And never got any great lengths of time, in and out, in and out, in and out. I had a little plastering business, and my guys had to put me in a flop house in Gardena. I just wasn't doing too good. Ever been in one of those rooms you don't shut the lights off because the little crawly things wake up? A guy with my pride winding up in a place like that. I could ask everybody in this room how you wound up where you wound up. I got on a bad drunk. You ever been on a bad drunk? I got on a bad drunk. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. I always drank to be something or somebody else. I never wanted to be David Barge. If I could be you, I'd be okay. If I could be you, I would be okay. I'll never be okay as David Barge. And I never wanted to feel the way I felt. I don't like now. I want to change however I feel. Don't have to be better. I just want to change however I feel now. I got to do that, and I'll do that with tequila or bourbon or fisticuffs or something. I got to change now. And I was in that room, and I knew who I was. I knew exactly who I was. I knew where I was. And I couldn't get drunk, and I couldn't get sober. I knew life was over for me. I just knew I couldn't go on anymore. But I can't go to AA. I've already been AA. There's no sense going back to Metropolitan State. They released me. Been locked up in a lot of places. You know, you guys read your literature, our disease is arrested. You know, when they arrested my disease, they always took me with it, you know. Just saying. So I had a wife and five kids. So I'm going to kill myself because it's the only way out for me. But who's going to take care of my wife and kids? So I said, what I'll do is I'll kill my wife and I'll kill my kids and then I'll commit suicide. And then I said, no, I'll kill my wife and I'll kill my sons. I'll let the daughters fend for themselves and then I'll kill myself. And I thought, no, I can't do that because them guys are going to do to my daughters what I did to theirs. So I'll kill my wife and I'll kill my daughters and let my sons fend for themselves, and then I'll kill myself. And I couldn't make up the decision who to kill and who not to kill. I wound up in a spot I didn't make the decision to get out of the bed and go to the bathroom. I just went where I was. And somewhere in that madness, the serenity prayer I had heard in meetings came into my life, came into my head, and I thought of the serenity prayer. So I knew I couldn't say it right, but I had to shut the voices off. And so I finally got it. I said, what I'll do is I'll come sit with you. And I won't drink, because I never drank when I sat with you, for how many days it was. I'll come sit with you, then I can decide who to kill and who not to kill. So I hope that fits our third tradition, because that's what I'm doing here. When I first started Alcoholics Anonymous, I lived on a very expensive neighborhood in Charlotte, North Carolina, Queens Road, if anybody knows it. Big time stuff as far as addresses. I had a lot of new cars and all that stuff, a lot of jobs. I ran construction crews in four or five states. And when I come to this sobriety, I was living in a flop house at Gardena, walking miles to get to a meeting. A little difference. I came to you in this sobriety that I carry now, had long hair, sores all over me. No teeth, they kept kicking my teeth out. Nice guy like me. I had pants and shirt that I've been regurgitating in and defecating in your name for a long time. Don't talk about that at dinner, but that's how I came. That's how I came to you. And I sat in the meetings and shook it out, and I went to, I hear later that I was a regular attender of a Tuesday noon meeting, which is a closed women's meeting. I went to two Al-Anon meetings a week. They just led me in there. And so I was just there. So I went to meetings. You didn't bring me coffee and you didn't bring me water. You didn't put your arms around me, but you let me stay. I was here smelling and acting the same way for quite a few weeks. I celebrated my birthday December 18th, 1972, because the old timer said it'd come a week before Christmas. So that's a week before Christmas. I don't know if that's my day or not, but that's the day I picked. So I hope everybody in here has their date. You keep that day. You figure that 28 days. You get that down to what day that is. And that's your day. And you always have a place to measure yourself from. When you think you're not doing so good today, I want you to think of that day. Tell me about the day before that day. Tell me about the week before that day. And maybe you'll find out you're not doing so bad after all, that things are looking up. Somewhere they had I believe it was a birthday party for an old timer, I'm not sure. And they had what I know now is probably a potluck. And they were having all this food, and I'm not a guy you want to sit next to and eat. And the people at that dinner fixed a little plate for me. I'm a real alcoholic. Real alcoholics never eat on an empty stomach. You don't want to lose the buzz, right? They fixed a little plate for me of food. And they put it on like a little table
like right out the door of the club, Birch Street Club.
I mean, it was kind of like in a parking lot, but don't think it was like a bad spot. Just put me a plate of food out there. What kind of people do this? I ain't a catch. AA's not going to improve if I'm here. AA don't need me. I'm not sure those Al-Anon meetings, the two I attended there a week, I don't think they needed me either. What kind of people are we? So I can stand here tonight and talk about sponsorship and steps and the book and meetings. I can tell you a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. I'm here because of the kindness of the people in this program. The kindness that we have that we could share it with someone else. Somewhere after that, I heard somebody say in that meeting, if you wash the coffee cups, you can stay sober. So I went to the guy in the kitchen and I said, hey, I'm here to wash the coffee cups. And he told me it was his commitment or something. I had my 38 in my belt then, and I just showed him my 38. I didn't pull it on him. I just showed it to him. I said, I'm going to wash these dishes. So that's how I got my first commitment. I'm not telling you that's the way to do it. I'm just sharing that's what I did. And then they said, if you set up the chairs, you can stay sober. So I set up the chairs, and I'm a straight row chair setter. You and I could have set chairs. My rows are straight, baby. And I would go to a meeting. If you set the chairs before I got there, I'd straighten your rows out. I'm on my chair straight. So I go to the meetings, and I do the chairs, and I wash the coffee cups. Every once in a while in the South Bay, somebody would say, hi, Dave, to me. I don't know how they knew my name, and I'd switch, and I'd go somewhere else. Go to another meeting, wash the coffee cups. Every once in a while, I'd read chapter 5 or read the traditions at the meeting. I guess every once in a while, they'd call me, and I would speak. I don't know, but I was just there. And I'm going to meetings, and I'm doing coffee cups, and I'm doing chairs. I'm doing the deal. I'm doing it. And all of a sudden, I got 7 or 8 months like that, and I'm so full of anxiety, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I just can't breathe, and I just don't know what's going on. I'm going to the meetings. I'm going to these meetings. I'm reading sometimes. I'm doing all the coffee cups. I'm doing all the chairs. And I can't breathe. The anxiety is so full. So I went to this meeting. We had a little speaker meeting on a Sunday night, and I went to this meeting, and I knew it was there, and I got there early because I just had to be at a meeting somewhere. And I'm just wandering around, and these two old-timers went and picked up this new guy and brought him to his first meeting, first AA meeting. First. It's first. You remember your first? It's first. And the old-timers dropped this guy off, and then he went home. And one of the wives called back and said the old-timer went home, and he had a heart attack, and he died. This old-timer. I went to that new guy who was waiting for his first meeting, and I said, what's your name? And he told me his name, and when he did, I put my 38 right in his mouth and said, if you ever drink, I'll blow your head off. To honor the old-timer that did the 12-step calls. Doesn't that make sense? Made sense to me. So why I'm telling you that stupid story is the next day I went to a little noon meeting. 12, 15 people in those days. And a couple of the old gray-haired ladies, the old grandmas, asked me if they could talk to me after the meeting. I said, these people finally recognize my talents. So, of course, I met with them, and four or five little ladies and a couple guys kind of stood behind them. We sat down after the meeting, and they looked at me, and we just sat there, and I was waiting for all the accolades to come. And these old grandmas started cussing like you would not believe. I didn't know grandmas knew that kind of language. Oh, my God, they were cussing and cussing and cussing. I was like, it embarrassed me. And they said, David, this is what you sound like when you talk. And we don't know what you're trying to say. But we'd like for you to learn a new language. The language of Alcoholics Anonymous. Old ladies look at me in the eye and tell me that stuff. Another old lady looked at me and she said, we see that gun in your belt all the time. We're afraid of you. We're afraid to talk around you. We're afraid to say something. We're afraid you're going to flip out and shoot all of us. We're afraid of you. And we don't want you to bring that gun to meeting anymore. The other old lady said, if you have to bring your gun to meetings, take it to Ontario to the AFG convention. But she told me I need it here. And they told me how to get a sponsor. I said, I want to get a sponsor. I said, yeah, you have to get a sponsor. See, what I'm telling you about this is every one of us go to meetings. Every one of us here hopefully has a home group. These people could have told me, get out of here and go somewhere else. I live in Los Angeles. There's a lot of meetings. They didn't tell me to get out of here and don't come back. They told me about their meeting. They're telling me what I had to do to stay in their meeting. Never told me to leave. Never said any of that stuff. Could have. I would have. Told me about their meeting and their love for Alcoholics Anonymous and their meeting. See, I wasn't housebroken when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to live around kind of that kind of stuff. So I went and asked this old guy to be my sponsor. Shame me into it. He says, you get your big book, come to my house Monday night at 7 o'clock. We're going to read the book and do the steps. I said, I already did all that stuff. He said, you get your big book, you'll be at my house Monday night at 7 o'clock and turn around and walked away from me. I thought it was kind of rude. I was at his house Monday night at 7 o'clock. So we went in, there's a little kitchenette thing there. He never offered me coffee or nothing. Just sat down. He said, oh, if I'm going to be your sponsor, we got some ground rules. I said, okay, what's that? Everybody's always got rules. Everybody. You know? See, I think all rules are made against me. Laws, you know, laws. I didn't get to vote on the stop sign. I think the stop sign is made just to mess with me. That's how I look at rules and laws. And it's all against me. None of them's for me. I said, okay, what do I got to do? He said, well, you got to stop bringing your gun to meetings. I was going to ask him the 38 in my belt or the 32 I always carried in my boot, because anybody knows two guns is better than one. Well, I said, that's probably a dumb question. I said, okay, I'll try that. And he said, I'm not asking you to try. I'm telling you, don't bring your gun to meetings anymore. You don't need to bring your gun to meetings. Hey, nobody wants bad for you here. Everybody wants good for you here. Don't bring your gun to meetings anymore. I said, okay, what else I got to do? You have to stop taking the money out of the baskets. I said, who told you I'm taking the money out of the baskets? He said, everybody knows you're taking the money out of the baskets. And I thought it was slicker than that. So I wanted to sort of taper off, but he wanted me to just go cold turkey, you know. Stop taking the money out of the baskets. Tomorrow when you go to the meeting, he said, put a little in. Because you don't put anything in, you get nothing out here. Put a little in. And I want you to put a little extra for the money you've taken. And I said, I don't know how much money I've taken. He said, you go tomorrow and put some in. You put a little extra and I'll tell you when to stop. 8 days, 3 months, and 49 years, they ain't told me to stop yet. I don't think I got this much. Well, that's fun money to pay back, isn't it? Yeah. So if I'm going to be your sponsor, you can't sit in the corner by yourself anymore. You have to sit with everybody else. I said, I don't want to sit with everybody else. He said, I don't want to be your sponsor either. But if I'm going to be your sponsor, I want you have to sit with everybody else. We sit as a group here. He said, at the end of the meeting, we hold hands, we say a closing prayer. You don't have to know the prayer, you don't have to believe in the prayer. But you're going to hold everybody's hands, be part of the closing meeting. I said, I'm not going to do that. I ain't going to do that. I ain't holding anybody's hands, I ain't doing any prayers. I ain't doing that. So my new sponsor said, good, come on, I'll take you down to the bar and get you a drink. I said, what are you talking about? I thought everybody said, get a sponsor, you're going to help me stay sober. Help me figure out the life here, you know. He said, David, you want what we have, you'll do what we do here. You want to continue doing what you do? What you do is what got you here. We do different things here. And if you want what we have, you'll do what we do. And what we do is we get together as a group at the end of the meeting. You don't have to believe in the prayer. You don't have to do any of that. But you will join hands. You know. So I had a sponsor told me to do stupid stuff. No. All it really did is change my life. I'd always seen life through my eyes. Got right in with me, get into these steps. He said, got to do this first step. I said, I already did that. He said, what is the first step? I said, well, but we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives become unmanageable. He said, yeah, but what's the first step? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives become unmanageable. He said, but what is the first step? Should have got an idiot for a sponsor. So he said, I know you can quote the first step, what it says. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you? And I didn't really have an answer for that. Sponsor asked me, did you ever tell anybody you're not going to drink today? Did you ever tell anybody you're not going to holler at them today? Not today. Not today. This day I'm going to stay clean and sober. This day. And then what happened? I would wind up on those days drinking again. When I meant not to. I went to the parent-teacher conference with my little daughter. And I was drinking and I yanked the teacher clear over her desk. They wouldn't let me go back there. I was going to be sober to see if they let me back to the parent-teacher's conference. When my little boys went to Little League, they banned me from the Little League field. So I was going to shoot one of the umpires, you know? Just crazy stuff, you know? So I'm going to try to stay sober on some of those days to make up for that. I have a whole life of making up. So I'm going to stay sober and I'll make up to do that. How many days did I say, I'm not going to do it this day? And did it again. My sponsor said, who else did you promise? I couldn't think. Who do you mean? He said, did you ever tell yourself? You ever promise yourself you ain't going to do it? I said, yeah. 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 I promise myself. For my family, for my wife and kids, for my grandma. People, not today. Today I'm going to show up and I'm going to make up for all the stuff that I've ever done to. Today I'm going to start. Today I can straighten it up. Today. And I would go and be drunk again. See, so I found out that I'm powerless over stuff. I'm powerless over alcohol before I even drink it. Our book talks about the compulsions and all the stuff that come from that once I take the drink. I'm powerless over alcohol before I even put it in my body. I'm powerless over my anger sometimes. I'm powerless over my fear. I'm a powerless guy. How do you admit that? We want to get into that second step that we were talking about. See, for an alcoholic, it's that insanity of the next thing we're going to do. I've been in Metropolitan State a couple of times. I've been in Black Mountain locked up. I've been in a lot of places locked up. You can always wiggle your way out of those places. But the insanity of how many times have we done the same thing? How many times? The insanity. Came to be this power greater myself, which to me was Alcoholics Anonymous. We do this. My sponsor wanted me to take this third step and turn my life well over the care of God. You got to be kidding me. Ain't doing that. Can't do that. Won't do that. Don't know how to do that. They started molesting me when I was 4 and 5 and 6. Used to beat me and hide me out in different states. I was a battered little kid. Life got good for me, and when I was 8 years old, they put me in a washer machine, an old Ringer washer. Watched me go around and around and almost rip my arm and my shoulder off. People I was with enjoyed it. Sent to a hog ranch. I lived 13 miles from the nearest building and 2 miles up a dirt road on a hog ranch by myself. I used to go with, this is where I started drinking when I was 8. I'd get up in the morning. I wanted to be a man like the men, and they would go out and we would unload 30 tons of garbage, 10,000 head of hogs. You'd feed them raw garbage. And I'd go out with all the Mexican guys there in the morning, and we'd pass that tequila around. And I wanted to be one of the men, like, give me that tequila. And I'd beg them, and they would all laugh at me, and then they would give me the tequila. I'd take a slug like the men did, and gag, a spit. I don't know how you alcoholics, us alcoholics, drink that stuff. It was just horrible. And then they'd all laugh at me. Ever been laughed at? 8 years old, I don't like being laughed at. I don't like it at all. Where does that come from? I don't know, but I don't like it. I would go off to school, walk down the dirt road, get the bus, go to school, and I'd come home, and they'd be out in hog pens, garbage in, garbage out every day. You know, it's a big job, 7 days a week. And I'd sneak in their little house and get the tequila, and I'd practice. And I can remember holding it in finally, and magic happened. 8-year-old kid, magic. I got to be a whole person, like. I got to be complete. I got to having some of the questions for all the answers I had. I could read those books that people throw in their garbage, in their trash. I'd read those books and drink that tequila, and man, things, life was good. I have dreams and aspirations. You have dreams and aspirations when you was a kid? I did. I was going to go someplace and be somebody. I don't know who, but I'm going to be somebody. And I'm going to travel the world, and I'm going to do that. And I'd read those books and drink that tequila, and life was good. And I had all these dreams and all these aspirations. And sometimes I think about people. People. I don't like people. People ain't been in my life, but I could drink that tequila sometimes. Get mellow. I could drink that tequila. Some days I could take the pimples right off your face. You didn't look so bad. Be all right. And then some days I drink that tequila and put the pimples right back on. Yeah. And that's the way it was for me as a little kid. I remember, like it was yesterday, late at night, and a party was going on, mariachis, up on the hill at this little house, and you could hear people laughing, and the mariachis were going, and it was really something. And I looked up, and I was in this little shed. I didn't have mariachis, and I didn't have lights, and I didn't have no people there. I remember drinking that tequila in that little shed, watching these people. And I know I don't need nobody. I don't need nobody. And I started my life that way. 9, 10, 11, locked up a lot. I'd escape and they'd lock me in a worse place. I shot my first guy when I was 15. I got married at 16. 4 kids when I was 20. I lived a different kind of life than a lot of people. A lot of anger, a lot of resentment, a lot of victimhood. And now I'm going to come in AA and I'm trying to be sober. And it's got to do with God, the God I prayed to when I was a kid, that God, the God I prayed to when I was out shooting people, that God, the God I prayed to when I threw my wife and kids across the room, that God. You've got to be kidding me. And I'm in AA now. What do you do? My sponsor said he didn't believe in the God I did. I believed in either. That around here we had to find this power greater ourselves. And so one of the ways he wanted me to do it was be at the meeting and join hands at the end of the meeting. And when you said the closing Lord's Prayer, I would say, "My Father who art in heaven, my Father, forgive me my trespasses as I forgive. Lead me not into temptation." So under my breath, he had me say that prayer over. Get me some sort of connection. One day I said the prayer because I was told to say the prayer, and one day I said the prayer and I even believed it. You guys have brainwashed me or something. So there's just ways that we have to do things here. So I've been loved and pushed and pulled and conned, and you know, all the way through the program. Sponsor wanted me to do a 4-step. Or you just wrote your 4-step. He said, I don't spell good. I don't write good. He said, no, we have to do a written 4-step here. I said, I can't do that. I'm not going to. I don't know how to do that. See, we have to write a 4-step to see what's going on here. So I just refused to do that. And so my sponsor told me a story. Told me a story about a guy home drinking. I know in your family somebody has done that. Home drinking. And he runs out of booze. My God, you're just getting into it. And you go in the toilet. You're the one you hid in the toilet tank is even gone. Your hideout's gone. I mean, your stash is gone. Somebody got your stash. It's gone. So he ran down to the package store. So that means this is a Southern story, not a liquor store. He went to the package store and he got him a bottle of Hope. It was good bourbon. And he brought that bourbon back and he got back to his house and he was right at the front door. And his big dog got him. and was just biting him all over the leg. And he's trying to kick the dog off, and the dog's got his leg, he's trying to kick the dog, and he's trying to hold on to his bottle, and he finally kicks the dog off, and he gets in his little room there, and his pants are all ripped, his leg's all bloody, and he's just bleeding all over the place. And he's trying to stop the blood, and he gets him a water glass, and he fills it full of bourbon, and he's drinking, and he's trying to stop the blood, and there's a knock on the door. He goes to the door, policeman at the door. The officer said, "Are you the guy that got bit by that dog?" And the guy says, "Yeah, look at my leg. That dog tore me up. I can't stop the bleeding." The officer said, "That dog has rabies. And you're going to have to go get rabies treatment." And our guy says, "No, get out of here and leave me alone." And the officer said, "I'm telling you, that dog has rabies. And you have to get treatment for that. Otherwise, you're going to die a most horrible and painful death. A most horrible, painful death. And you have to go get treatment." And our guy said, "I don't care about all that. Leave me alone." The officer said, please listen to me. It's a horrible, horrible, painful way to die." Our guy said, "Get out of here and leave me alone." And he got rid of the officer, and the guy went and sat down at his little table. He got him a pad and pencil, filled his water glass up, you know. I don't know why, he was by himself, but the water glass kept getting empty, you know. Got him a pad and pencil. He wrote down all the names of the people he wanted to bite before he died. And he got another page, and he wrote down all the names of the people he thought, if they had rabies, would want to bite him. And he had a pretty good list. Pretty good list. My sponsor said, "I know you got no resentments and no angers. I know you have no sex hang-ups. I know you don't owe anybody any amends. I already know all that stuff." He said, "But if you had rabies, it was going to die a horrible, horrible, painful death. Is there anybody you'd like to bite first?" What was my answer? Yes. Yes, I have that list. And so my four steps started there with resentments. Just resentments. That feelings, resent, refelt, all that stuff that carried me through life. Because my life was always about how it's going to be and how it was. Never what it is. I have no is in my vocabulary. No is. All was is. Went to meetings. When you get a sponsor, you go to meetings with your sponsor, right? And I went to the meetings. Got there 10 minutes early, you know. My sponsor was sitting there talking to him. I'd never been to this meeting or anything, and I started straightening the chairs up. My sponsor said, "Hey, is that your commitment?" I said, "No, I've never even been in this meeting before. But look at these crooked rows. I don't like crooked rows." He said, "Well, maybe the person has that commitment likes crooked rows. You need to love and support them for the job they're doing." That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. "You're putting up crooked rows, and I'm going to love and support you for it." See, I know it don't happen to you, but there's people in the meetings that I go to that I think they should be doing things a little different than they're doing. I mean, there's some meetings I go to, I think, does he have to say the same thing every meeting? Does she always have to talk? When I drive down the road, I know it's hard to believe, but some people don't drive the way I think they should be driving. Sometimes I'm standing in the grocery line, and people have 12 items in the 10-item line. So my sponsor said, "I need to love and support these people that are doing it their way and not my way." I've been practicing that for a long time. So today I can stand up for who I am, but I don't have to stand against anybody. Your way may not be my way, but I'm going to trust the Spirit and the willingness of God to show you your way to your highest good. I don't have to show you. You just got to show up and it'll all work out. So I have to go around. I have a saying that I say to myself all the time now is, Who's the matter with me? You would think that I would have this thing down. But I get irritated. I say, who's the matter with me? Emmalinda. What is she doing? So I could get down to what's bothering me. Sometimes I don't know what's bothering me, but I'm pissed off at Larcene. Yeah? And then I examine that and find out I should be pissed at him. So I say a lot to that. Who's the matter with me? Who's the matter with me? It's just little tools that I don't, if anybody could use it. Because I just get irritated a lot, and I don't know where that comes from. I already shared with you that I had a hard time all my life with the way things are. I had a hard time with the word now, the meaning of now. Living now. And I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I hang out with you and Al-Anon and all the places we go here, and you're telling me live one day at a time. So I'm setting out to do that. We all tell each other one day at a time. Then we'll say, oh, maybe a half a day at a time, or, you know, one day at a time. And I'm trying to live one day at a time, and I'm somewhere thinking you guys are doing it and I ain't getting it. I ain't getting it because I'm all over the place with one day at a time. How do you do that one day at a time? I'm like a guy. I'm like a little kid that had a little red wagon. I never really had one, but if somebody's ever a red, little red wagon. And in that little red wagon is my anger, is my shame, the shame we don't talk enough about, is my fear. All the things, all my irritations, all my failures. In the little red wagon was my wife and kids for a long time. And I pulled them around. I didn't know until I got in the fourth step. My life was always my wife's fault. And I did a fourth step. Fourth step is where we write it down, and then we get a story in the fifth step, don't we? That's where our story, we get to tell the story of all that stuff. And in that story is when I found out that maybe it wasn't all my wife. Maybe I had a hand in some of that stuff. But I was never able to look at that, as simple as that is. As simple as that is. And I had these five kids that I was so guilty over, so remorseful over. And I found out in my fourth step and fifth step that I had so much resentment at those kids. My kids that I loved. My kids that the sun rose and set with them. Because when I would look in their eyes, in their face, I would see all my failures. They didn't have to say anything. They didn't have to do anything. I could just look because I carried all those failures with me. And I always had them in my little red wagon. I've been to a lot of counseling and a lot of stuff over my lifetime. And people have helped me rearrange the wagon. And I felt better for a time. I felt better with rearranging the wagon. But then it would all come back again and I would feel just as bad. But getting in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor and with people showing me the way and people give me the courage. I'm a guy with a lot of guns, but not a lot of courage. People sharing their life with me and telling me what they're doing and show me who they are without telling me what to do. Because even when I needed it, I don't hear it. Showing me the way. I've got to take the stuff out of the wagon. Take it out of the wagon. And there's no more. And some of it I pitted around and I tried to put it back sometimes. But over the years. And now, most of the time in my life, I know what you mean live one day at a time. See, because you can't live one day at a time when you got all your yesterdays with you. When all that anger from their childhood, all that victimhood stuff, all my guilt, all my remorse. I lived it all of my life. But you can't live sober that way. Can't live sober that way. And we have steps that deal with that. And I reached a point in my life, I like now. I like right now. I'd like right now. Now. The thing I feared and fought my whole life to change now. See, because what I got to share with you, I found out for me is now is when God lives. God don't live tomorrow, you know. Don't live yesterday. God lives right now. Right now. And I know that for this alcoholic, that God lives right now, right in this room. I don't have to go somewhere to find him. Or her, or it. Whatever you want to name this power that's greater than ourselves. Whatever you want to call it, it's fine with me. But God is here right now. And the power of our Al-Anon family groups and our Alateens and our alcoholics, the power that we have right here, right now, with each other, how can it fail us? How can it fail us? So, the yellow roses are for joy and friendship and fellowship. The white roses are for purity. And you're going to hear my, they're not for me, the white roses. The white roses are for my friend Kay, who's going to straighten everything up I've just said. So know that I love you, and I care about you, and there's not a damn thing you could do about it.
Okay, let me say, Kay, I got to hug you.